I'd like to call the House Committee on Government Accountability and Information Technology for Tuesday, February 20th, 2007 to order. Today we're having a public hearing on House Bill 2509. Patrick, would you give us a little rundown on that?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. Members of the committee, House Bill 2509 requires that mountaineering groups that are traveling above the timberline between the months of November and March be equipped with and use electronic signaling devices. It also requires that paid guides that are traveling with groups, including children under 18 years of age, carry those devices when traversing above the timberline. In your packets, you will note the Dash 1 amendments. Those amendments replace the bill, they are the second portion of that, the portion dealing with groups including minors, is the same. However, the first section would only deal with individuals traveling above 10,000 feet in elevation on Mount Hood during those months of November to March. We, as yet, have yet to receive a fiscal impact statement on this, but the measure has no revenue impact. And other materials that were provided that are at your desk, we have some testimony from Jesse Laird, who is a operates rescue teams in Deschutes County. He's a constituent of Representative Burley, who we received that testimony from. And there is a packet of newspaper articles that was submitted by Representative Lim.
Thank you, Patrick. Before we start, a couple of items. Because our new sound system is very sensitive, anyone who has Blackberries or cell phones, even if you've got them silenced, if you would turn them off, please, because they make the system buzz. And the other item is that if you notice, this is scheduled for public hearing not only today but on Thursday, because we had some folks who were actually on the mountain yesterday who expressed an interest in testifying, but they wanted to rest up before they came yet down here, so we gave them that opportunity. We applaud them for their service and gave them the chance to testify. With that, the other thing, if you have not signed up and you want to testify, be sure and let Ellen know that you want to testify. So I'm going to open the public hearing on House Bill 2509, and I'm going to call Representative Lim. Would you come up and give us a...
Yes. Mr. Chair, if you don't mind, let me, my friend John...
Absolutely. Okay, well, you can come up together and we'll... You guys can work out how you want to go.
You want to start out?
Thank you both for being here. I know your schedules are busy. I know you have a hearing next door, and so proceed.
I will start, Representative Lim. I have worked with John, and I believe you're going to receive testimony from Representative Crummell. And I think pretty much the things that I'm going to say, Chairman Riley, and I am Representative John Dollum, House District 59. I think pretty much the things that I'm going to say, my two colleagues are going to cover very well. But there were two issues of great importance that I wanted to bring to your attention. For $5 and a device the size of my wallet, you can be located. You can save your life. But more importantly, you can save a search and rescue life. And with that, Mr. Chair, I'll go next door and testify on the next bill that I'm on. And I will leave the... I think Mr. Representative Lim has some compelling information to give you. Thank you.
And I'm not going to ask for questions right now. Representative Allen, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Let me move this way. Chair Riley and members of the committee, thank you very much for hearing this House Bill 2509. And for the record, my name is John Lim, state representative from District 50, which is the Gresham area. I didn't expect this House Bill 2509 be such a high profile beer, but suddenly timing was right that yesterday three person lost in the mountain, and one of the person that had locator beacons, and they were able to find the person and the three of them right away. So instead of losing lives, they were able to save their lives. I'd like to give you a little background how I come to introduce this legislation. And last December, early on, three young men from the out of state, one from Texas and New York area, and they were climbing the mountain, and then accident happened, and one person found dead, but the two persons are still missing. And especially Jerry Cook's mother, she is the Korean American and first generation like I am, and live in Brooklyn, in New York area. And so I went to meet her at the Hood River area to give my support. And so she expressed a deep concern. This mountain is a beautiful mountain, but it's very dangerous. And then we are going to see the people continually losing lives in the mountain or get lost. As a matter of fact, last 25 years, we lost about 35 people. I regret that this bill should be introduced 10, 20 years ago. Then we could have saved, if not all 35, at least many of them still alive and be a productive citizen. Even previous death, last year, December 25, around Thanksgiving time, James Gibbs issue and his family at the southern part of Josephine County has been a national big issue around 10 days still. I see some of the publications, articles in the newspaper. Also, the James Gibb, the father, Spencer Gibb, I have known him personally more than 10 years, a good friend of mine, a good businessman, and who lost his son, James Gibb, in a tragic way. All happened in our state of Oregon. I'm not going to talk about that issue anymore, but especially I want to focus on the Mount Hood area. It is a known fact, Mount Hood is the national number one mountain climbers wants to climb on. And the world's second mountains that the mountaineers wants to climb on. So we have very famous mountain. It's a beautiful mountain. At the same time, the weather in the mountain just changes in a matter of minutes from the beautiful weather to the 7,500 miles an hour and snow also. Out of that concern, I introduced House Bill 2509, which says that anyone going on top of the tree line, they must carry a locator beacon. It implies every mountain in our state. And as this began to publicize, many mountaineers called us, or we called them to have some input from them. And what I'm hearing, most of them, if not all, opposing this bill. So to make it better, I made several changes in a narrow way. Instead of every mountain in our state, let's focus on the Mount Hood only. So that this proposed amendment applies only Mount Hood, not any other mountain. Second is not every month, but the November through March, which is 5 months only. That's the time most accidents happen. It could happen that every month and every day, but especially during the winter month, most accident, fatal accident happen. And then instead of a treetop, I required that 10,000 feet and above. As you know, Mount Hood is 11,000 I believe it's 236 feet. And so that the anyone going up there, because I'm going less than 10,000 feet, I'm not going to carry a locator beacon. I don't think that's the idea. My idea and my message is anyone going up there, they should carry. But especially a plan to go up to the mountain top is required to carry the spear. And third, I made a change. Instead of implementing right away, change it to 2010, still 3 years away. And right now, I don't think we don't have enough locator beacons at this time. And already that they're going into the Mount Hood area, many people asking for, can I get a locator beacon? Just $5. It's about the 8 ounces. So weight is not issue. So with this narrowly limiting on the mounted only, and then I hope that this is more palatable for the mountaineers to support this bill. Still I'm hearing, still that's not far enough. We cannot support of this bill. That's what I hear. And you will hear more from the group of people on this bill. What I'm hearing, why the government try to dictate our personal life and responsibility? You know, when we are going into the mountain, we know there is a danger. If there is a danger, that is my personal responsibility and my freedom. And saying this is not the big brother looking after our own back, which I understand. Even when I was several years ago, we required every person driving in the car, they should have a safety belt. I didn't like it. This car is my house, my office, and then no one should dictate me what I can do in my car. But right now, I believe that the seat belt is one of the best things to save lives. And motorcyclists, we require them also the helmet. They didn't like it. But we know for sure after data, you know, statistics, that also saves the lives. One of the questions asking to me, oh, these locator beacons might give you a false sense of security, which I understand. And when someone going into the mountain, they are carrying the maps and then a compass and plus many other items they must carry at this time. Does it give them a false sense of security? In my opinion, carrying this locator beacon is an additional tool. This is not going to save everybody. But when they go into the mountain, make sure it's small piece attached in it, just take it out, then it's begin to work. Someone has to report it, that person is lost in the mountain. Then they can go over there, find out exactly where that person is. Even the person is under the 10 feet of snow, they can detect right away. Last December, three persons from out of state went to the mountain and one person found dead. They found him, but two persons still in the mountain. We were not able to find them. If they were carried, their locator beacon, even though they were dead, we were able to find them and then a closure on the issue. The Jerry Cook's mother and Kim, last name is Kim in Korean way, she called me once in a while. Any new information? Anything going on? And I couldn't answer anymore. The only way we can find out that the summertime comes up, when the snow melted, that's the only time we can find it. So, as far as the Jerry Cook's mother is concerned, her son is not dead, even though we know he's presumed dead. So she couldn't put the closure on her son's fate. This is very, you know, this is, how can I say, the grief in her mind continues on, until the closure of this issue. So I can speak in many different ways. Today I just found out another information that the RICO reflector. And right now, this RICO reflector attached in the and the outfit, it comes with it together. It's about the four ounces, very small. Either they can, it's in the outfit or in the boots or whatever. And it's skiers going into the mountain or snowboard, whatever. And it is, most of them eventually will carry. I believe my bill after 5 to 10 years later, this will be obsolete. Because most of the clothing, when they go into the mountain, they are going to have automatically RICO reflector or built-in the locator beacons. After I introduced this bill, even Oregonian today's talk in the editorial talked about this is needed. This is one of the most important bills. Since then on, I was known as a beacon man. And so I hope message is clear. I hope we can send this message to the statewide, especially the young children. And I'm hoping also we can send this message throughout the nation. So anyone else going into the mountain, they need to carry some kind of electrical identifier. And there is a very expensive global positioning system, about more than $500. And well, someone, if rich enough to buy, that's good. But we don't need to have that sophisticated global that positioning system. Simply $5 or less will save lives. Not only the persons involved in the mountain, but that will put their parents, their wife, and their children and relatives. They are going to put them at ease. So I believe this is a good bill. Always there is some downside, some negative side, but I see some positive side also. Overall considering, I believe this is much better ones, productive one, and saving lives, and also the misery of their families.
Thank you, Representative Lim. Any questions? Representative Gerard.
Thank you. Representative Lim, do you believe, too, that this might save lives for research or rescue teams as well as those that are presumed lost?
Yes. Thank you very much for the question, and Chair Riley. In this room, we have a J.A. Wempler, the sheriff from the Mount Hood area. I have known him some time. And he is a dedicated person saving lives, especially during the December early month. And I visited him personally. I talked to him personally. He told me, and I asked him, how much is going to cost your county per day? And he gave estimation about $5,000 a day. That's tax dollars. And so if we were able to require each climber put this locator beacons, then instead of 10 days, the next day or same day, we can find the person. That saves, not only saving the life is definitely, but saving money. And also consider hundreds of volunteers going over there trying to find a person. Sometimes we are endangering the volunteers and rescuers. So this is simple. $5 that the locator beacons will save time and energy and tax dollars and volunteers and rescuers time.
Representative Thatcher.
Thank you for your testimony. I have a couple questions. One would be, why would this bill only apply to mountain climbers and not any other users of the mountain? And my other questions, well, I guess I could just ask them later, but go ahead.
Okay. I don't want this bill to be interpreted. It applies to everybody, even going to that ski. I ski and almost every winter. As a 71-year old, I'm still good enough to ski. And then I don't want them that I don't want this will require misinterpreted. Oh, since I'm going ski, I need to have a locator beacon. So as it is narrowing the amendment, still is opposing. So if I expand more, then I might have more strong opposition, which I try to avoid. That's one of the reasons.
Follow up? Yes, thank you. So I suppose that would be the reason why you narrowed it to 10,000 foot in altitude and above rather than...
Exactly.
Okay, yes. And then follow up?
Yes.
Is there any discussion of enforcement, and how would something like this be enforced? How would you know if somebody is, like, we have tickets for giving, if you're not wearing your seatbelt or if you're not wearing a helmet? Okay. I'm just wondering if that's where you'd be going next.
Okay, Chair Riley and Representative Thatcher. Yes, of course, I thought about it. And then should I put the $1 penalty or $25 or hundreds or thousands of dollars? If we have to recover the cost, I don't think it's I think it's too much for them to bear. When I put the reasonable amount of penalties in the bill, someone who lost in the mountain say, oh, the calling their mother or friends or wife, don't call them. You know that the if I have to pay all the expenses, they are trying to find me. I don't want that happen. And so instead of saving lives, putting the hefty penalty clause in it, it might endanger lives in the mountain. So I'd like to see this bill pass as an amendment and see whether it's going to work or not. I'm sure it will work. And so if someone absolutely denied, I don't want to carry it, no one can stop the person. But with this bill requiring them, it will urge them. Make sure that's the law and it's good for you to carry. Simply, this is the 8 ounce and the very small one. You can put in the belt or you can carry it on your shoulder. And if someone has a sensible mind, then they should carry this locator beacons.
One more follow up?
Yeah, so just so it's more of a suggestion, really.
Yeah.
Okay.
Strong urge, I could say.
Thank you very much, Representative. We appreciate your time.
Thank you very much. You like to add something?
No, thank you.
Okay.
I would like to ask both Representative Boone and Representative Crummell to come up and if you guys decide for between yourselves, who wants to go first and proceed?
I'll go ahead and go first, Mr. Chair. For the record, State Representative Jerry Crummell, House District 26, Wilsonville, Sherwood, and Gaston. Mr. Chair, and members of the committee, I'm offering testimony today for House Bill 2509. Not just because I am a co-sponsor on the bill, but because I'm interested for a variety of other reasons. Having been through training as an EMT and rescuer, I know what goes through the minds of a rescuer when they are out there trying to find people that have been lost, whether it's someone that's lost in the river or on a mountain or at sea or just about anywhere else. I'm also interested because one of my constituents was one of the young ladies found yesterday with the help of a mountain locator unit. Had that unit not been, the locator device not been used, I would venture to say that they probably would still be on the mountain. I also realize that there's some folks that would say, well, you know, that this, when the weather's so bad that rescue attempts can't be made. But the thing is that when the weather is bad, many times ground rescues are still attempted. And if a person has a locator on, it's going to be much easier to get into the area where they are if you know where, in fact, they are, even if an air rescue can't be accomplished. And I know that opponents of the legislation say that this will deny them their right to enjoy the mountain, and I'm not trying to deny anyone's right or enjoyment of the mountain or anything else for that matter. But I would say that when you are putting other people's lives in danger, as when you get lost, and there is an operation for a rescue that's being taken out, then the rescuers should have whatever tools are necessary and meaningful for them to be able to carry out a successful rescue operation and not have to turn the rescue into a recovery. The other thing is that rescuers are putting their own lives in danger when they go out on the mountain. And if they have a tool such as a locator device that is sending a signal so that they know closer or more where you are, then their ability to find you is going to be much greater. I think that we've heard complaints from our constituents about the cost of the rescue operations. And for me, it's not a matter of the cost, but quite frankly, the fact that I know what goes through the minds of the rescuers when they're out there. And when they don't come back successful, when they haven't had a successful mission, it wears on them very, very heavily. These people are into saving lives. And when they don't find the person that they're looking for, it affects them in a very dramatic way. I mean, giving them every tool possible is what we should be aiming to do. And I think that, you know, there's also the emotional cost, not just to the rescuer themselves, but to the rescuer's family, because they're out there with them. And then the other thing is that when a person is lost on the mountain, the fact that their families don't know where they are. Quite frankly, I think, you know, I've always thought that suicide was a selfish act, and it is. And what I thought was even more have thought is even more selfish is when a person decides to jump off a bridge into traffic, because then the car that they land on is going to be responsible for their death. I feel the same way about the mountain climbers. If they're not willing to carry a little locator device that's the size of a wallet that they can self-activate, so it's not like they're going to be tracked while they're on the mountain, but they can self-activate so that if they are lost, someone knows that they're lost, and there's a way of finding them, then I don't think they're being quite as selfish. And I have no problem with the fact that the climbers want to climb. I think it's an admirable activity. But I also think that there's some safety factors that we ought to take into place. Can you imagine, though, where we would be today if the answer would have been no when many years ago the FAA decided that they wanted to require the black box on every airplane? If the answer would have been no, because that'll take away my right to fly freely around the skies. Do you know how many people have been saved and how many people have been rescued because of the locators that are on aircraft? And I'm not talking about just the big commercial jets. I'm talking about the smaller planes as well. Because they can be located, the rescue operation can take place a lot quicker. So, Mr. Chair, and I understand also Representative Lim's amendments, and while I would rather see the bill go forward from a standpoint of requiring the entire mountain, I will certainly yield to Representative Lim and the amendments that he is proposing, and if it's the committee's wish to pass those, put those amendments in the bill, then I would most certainly support that. And with that, Mr. Chair, I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Representative Crummell. Any questions from the committee? Seeing none, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Representative Boone?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm Scott Bruin, State Representative Scott Bruin. I represent House District 37, which is primarily Tualatin and West Lynn. And I come here today to testify on this as not only as a state representative, but somebody who's also an avid mountain climber, somebody who enjoys the sport very much. And that's, if I have any expertise at all, which isn't much, that's what I bring to the table. First of all, let me say that I applaud Representative Lim on his efforts here to try to make mountain climbing, a safer sport. I applaud him because his heart is exactly in the right place. I come to you today feeling a little bit like the ogre, because I'm one of the few people, at least, that's sort of spoken publicly, that is humbly against this bill, and for a couple points. First of all, I want to say that I think the amendments that have been proposed are a great improvement to the bill. I think it's actually going the right direction rather than the wrong direction. Having said that, I think what these amendments are doing is sort of reducing the scope of what was originally intended with the bill, and I think that's the right direction, and I would argue that continuing to go down that path is the right path to go. I do not feel that you can legislate safety on the mountain. Mountain climbing is, by definition, an extremely dangerous and extremely risky sport for a lot of the reasons that Representative Krimmel outlined. A lot of people, including myself, and I should say, I don't by any stretch of imagination sit here and think that I speak for the mountain climbing community in any way. I do not. I speak for Scott Bruin. But I know that a lot of people within the mountain climbing community do climb mountains for a bunch of reasons. One of those is to get away from regulation, is to get away from the things of the street and the cities and the towns. Honestly, to get away from the things of man and to get on the side of a mountain and to a lot of us to get closer to God. And that's why you climb mountains. I'm not sure that, for a sport that is inherently risky and inherently dangerous, and that's everybody who climbs a mountain knows the risks and the dangers that go with it. I'm not sure that we're making it safer by installing regulation that's proposed in this House bill. I think if we're going to be intellectually honest and intellectually consistent about mandating the use of safety equipment, we ought to start with the basics. And I'm not advocating this, but we ought to consider and start with the basics of mountain climbing. If we're going to do that, if we're going to try to mandate safety, we should start with boots and crampons and ice axes and helmets and ropes and harnesses and the correct sort of Gore-Tex clothing and food and water and headlamps and everything else that goes into a safe climb. Because I have to tell you, those implements are much more determinant upon a safe and successful climb than the Mount Hood locator unit. I think carrying a Mount Hood locator unit is a great thing to do. It's absolutely a smart choice that a mountain climber could make to carry a mountain locator unit, a GPS system, a map, a compass, a cell phone, any sort of communication device that you can think of, and it has the sort of the dimensions to put in a backpack or in your coat pocket. However, if we're going to mandate these things, which I don't recommend, we better do them all and not just pick pieces of like this, pick individual pieces. I know the genesis of this legislation is a result of the tragic accident that happened this last December on Mount Hood, and it was a tragic accident. I'm convinced, and once again, I don't pretend to speak for the entire mountain climbing community, but this mountain climber would contend that those three excellent climbers would not have been saved by a requirement to carry a Mount Hood locator unit. The issue of the weather was referenced. We knew where these climbers were. It wasn't an aspect. We didn't know where they were. We knew exactly where they were. The problem was those conditions, if you recall, were basically being on a different planet. They were 100 mile an hour winds. I don't remember what the temperature was, but they were absolutely inhuman conditions. And that's why those folks had the problems they did. So I once again, and Mr. Chair, I appreciate the opportunity to speak on this. I think when we're ever in doubt as a legislative body, I think, first of all, we have to remember that there aren't legislative solutions to every single problem we see. Some things are beyond the scope. And I think if we're ever in doubt, that we should err on the side of liberty and not necessarily always err on the side of more regulation. So thank you.
Thank you, Representative Bruin. Any questions? Yes, Representative Geron.
Representative Bruin, I'm going to ask you the same question I asked Representative Lim. And that is, it's one thing as a mountain climber to put your life on the line. It's another thing to put rescue their lives on the line.
Right.
And I'd like you to answer that question or just make a reference to that.
Do you want me to comment on that? What's the specific question?
Well, the specific question is, for $5, I think that you can make it a lot easier on search and rescue.
Right.
But the irony is there is testimony that search and rescue feels there might be false positives or false alarms of which their lives would be put in danger as
right.
well. So I've done mountain climbing, and it's one thing to do something stupid and you end up killing yourself. It's another thing to do something stupid and you end up killing someone else. So that's my concern. I just wonder if
right.
you have
I think it's a real concern. I mean, those gentlemen, not only this weekend with the climbing party on the south side of Mount Hood, but the climbing party and the rescuers on the north side climb that was north and east side climb that was this last December. I mean, those guys are heroes. You know, it's been mentioned that they're mostly volunteers. These are mountain climbers who are volunteering to help their fallen brethren, if you will, that are in trouble. And something that I'm sure that the committee can appreciate is that the mountain climbing community is a very tight, it's not uniform in voice. I want you to know that, but it certainly is a tight-knit community in what its passions are. It definitely is a fraternity, and those, you know, mountain climbers, when a mountain climber is in trouble and there's somebody that has the ability to help that climber in a search and rescue sort of capacity, mountain climbers that I've come across with and I've dealt with are eager to participate, almost, if you will, excuse me, be damned the consequences, because it is part of that fraternity. Once again, I've said it many times, I'll say it one more time, I don't pretend to speak for the community, but most of the search and rescue folks that I've talked to will be the first to tell you that's great, you should carry a Mount Hood locator, you know, it's a wonderful piece of equipment to carry. But mandating it, I don't have any sense that there's any sort of majority opinion among the rescue community. I'm not talking necessarily about the police, I'm talking about the people that are mountain rescue workers that are on the side of the mountain. You know, to your point, Representative Gerard, if it is fair to the search and rescue teams to mandate that people carry the Mount Hood low carrier unit, it is also absolutely fair and probably should be a precedent that we mandate correct functional crampons, the right kind of ice axe, and the whole litany of equipment and gear that I've already mentioned. So.
Representative Byer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. How are you?
Good. The ogre's great.
Yeah. is this a piece of equipment that you include in your climbs?
I always carry communication devices. When I'm climbing, I'm usually with a party, and yes, the party almost always has a Mount Hood locator unit.
Thank you.
I want to add that I think that having a Mount Hood locator unit, even the requirement for a Mount Hood locator unit for any sort of youth group, I mean, we all remember the tragedy of the OES issue. I mean, that's a no-brainer, honestly. Even in a guided situation, even if it's adults that are paying a fee or doing some sort of park endeavor or whatever it may be, if it's a guided and you're relying on one or several individuals as part of, and you're paying for that service, or you're acknowledging that you're an inferior in that service and somebody else is the superior as far as skills, I think that's appropriate as well to mandate the use of that. What I'm talking about are individual adult mountain climbers.
Right. And follow up? And that was my question is, you know, in your choice when you go out to climb, is that something you would normally carry?
I have a follow-up to that. So would you then say that this is a good bill for people under 21, people who are not experienced mountaineers, who are in a group?
I would say that it's certainly a good idea for children or any sort of a group, you know, any child-related activity, whether it's Boy Scouts or some sort of a school activity, absolutely. And I would also say it's a good idea for any acknowledged inadequacy in skills. Okay, so I'll give you an example. Portland Parks and Recreation has an excellent mountain climbing program, and they take hundreds of people up the mountain every single year. These are all amateurs that go to a day of mountain climbing school, and then the next day they climb out. It's a wonderful program. I think that, but by sort of engaging in that program, you acknowledge that, hey, I'm just a person that wants to climb a mountain, and we're putting a lot of trust in the guide service. And I think in that situation, it would be appropriate to say that the that the guides had that. Now, if I'm not mistaken, I think there may be statute that says that now. I mean, I think there was statute that came out of the OES tragedy a few years ago. I'm not sure exactly what the statute is, but if I'm not mistaken, there's statute that gets its arms around that somehow right now.
It doesn't quite do that, but
okay.
There is statute, but it doesn't quite address that. But aren't most of these programs summertime programs?
Well, and that's, they are. I mean, and certainly there's a, and if I understand the amendment to the bill, it would make it a wintertime sort of mandate as well. So, yes.
Representative Gerard.
One other question. Since this bill doesn't really have an enforcement mechanism, it's more of a suggestion than it is a, I mean, it's a mandate, but it doesn't have any consequences if you don't meet the mandate. Doesn't that kind of address some of your concerns?
It does, although I don't know why we do statute if we don't if we don't pretend to enforce statute. That's a whole different philosophical discussion. I'm not sure I have an answer to it right now. I think having this discussion is wonderful because everybody that's hearing this discussion, it's read about in the paper. Everybody in the mountain climbing community who may have been on the fence about whether or not to personally carry this sort of equipment, I think this helps educate people. I think it's a great education process. Once this is in statute, but not necessarily in the public realm we're talking about, I'm not sure what effect it would have if we're not enforcing it.
Representative Edwards, you had a question?
Yeah, thanks, Mr. Chair. Would you say, first of all, thanks for coming to testify, and I respect your thoughts about, it's almost as if you're speaking about the slippery slope, pardon the really bad pun there, but of potential government regulation here. What are your thoughts about the obligation of the county to provide those rescue services at a cost to the county? And, I'm getting a sense that that's part of what drives this discussion, is that there are public dollars going to rescue private individuals, as I think they should.
I've sensed that the conversation sort of changed from helping climbers have safe climbs to how and what involvement the public should have in paying for it. And I think they're two separate issues necessarily. if I thought that mandating the Mount Hood Locator Unit truly would save lives, that's a different question to ask. The Mount Hood Locator Unit, once again, is a great tool to have, but the evidence that says it is a guarantee of saving life, as in the same vein that having the right kind of, not to reiterate myself, but the same kind of foot equipment, the same kind of ice axe, the same kind of ropes, the same kind of climbing team, everything else that all the variables that are in mountain climbing, and there's dozens and dozens and dozens of variables in a successful mountain climb. I'm losing my train of thought here a little bit, but to back to your question, the cost issue is a real issue, but I'm not sure the cost issue is addressed by mandating a Mount Hood Locator Unit or not. If we as a state decide that either the public is going to be responsible for the cost or not responsible for the cost, I don't think we should make that decision based on the Mount Hood Locator Unit, because whether or not the party this weekend had a Mount Hood Locator Unit or whether or not the party back in December had a Mount Hood Locator Unit, there's still extensive costs involved.
Representative Thatcher.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Bruin, I have not gone mountain climbing. I personally think it's nuts. I save my nuttiness for flying small airplanes with mountain locator units. However, could you help me understand how these electronic signaling devices work? I mean, do you have to, I guess, probably press a button or something?
You have to turn it on,
Well, okay, so you turn it on, but then you have to activate it to send out an emergency signal, and if you fall down a crevasse and knock yourself out, I guess it doesn't really turn itself on.
That's a great segue, and not to make light of it at all, but the three gentlemen that had the tragedy back in December, the person that they found, my theory is this person was injured. They built a snow cave. Inclement weather came in. The two other guys went to find help and fell off the mountain. It wouldn't have helped them at all. Would it have helped the gentleman who was in the snow cave? Sure. But they knew where he was anyway from his cell phone. You know, yes, if you fall, unless it's on, unless you've already signaled it to work, in which case you've got people rescuing you when you don't need to be rescued, the only way it gets turned on is if you are, is if you proactively do it. That's not where we have problems on Mount Hood. For the majority, I mean, the majority of deaths that were mentioned earlier on Mount Hood come as a result of falls. They come, or ice fall, either falling off the mountain literally or having debris fall on the climber. You recall, four or five years ago, the incident on the south side of Mount Hood where a climbing party fell on their descent and tangled into another climbing party, and everybody's roped up. You have to remember at this point. So you had this just mess, I mean, almost like a spider web, a mangled spider web of people that fell into the very large crevasse that's on the south side. The climb's called the Bergschrund. Several people died in that situation, and then if you remember later on, there was the helicopter rescue where the helicopter crashed. Nobody would have been saved in that horrible situation by a Mount Hood locator unit. Same story was, I think, a year prior to that. There was a young couple that were climbing the north side, the Cooper Spur route, very close to where this climbing party back in December had their problems, and their situation. They were training to climb Mount McKinley. It was a very bad climbing day. It was very soft, gummy snow, and they came up the Cooper Spur side, and then decided to also descend down the Cooper Spur side. And what people think happened is they slipped. But the reason they think they slipped is because the snow at that point started gumming up in the crampons. So instead of having a good contact with the crampons on the ice, is what you want. You basically had snow on snow, and they lost their footing that way. Once again, a Mount Hood locator unit would not have helped that party. Now, the OES party, however many years ago, absolutely would have saved the OES party.
Thank you very much for your testimony. I appreciate you being here, and we appreciate your expertise, whether it's, as you say, it's very small or not, it's appreciated.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Much.
Appreciate it.
I want to remind people one more time before I call the next witness that if you want to testify, be sure and sign up with the assistant over here. And there's only one person who says they are from more than 100 miles away, and I'd like to get that person up. Sheriff, I'm going to apologize before I say your name. Wampala?
Wampler, sir.
Wampler. If you'd come forward, please. Thank you. If you'd just state your name again for the record and proceed when you're ready.
Well, thank you very much for this opportunity, Chairman. Joseph A. Wampler, Sheriff, Hood River County. Just appreciate the opportunity to address such an important issue, especially for us up around Mount Hood. I don't need to say a whole lot in regards to why this is where it's at. I really appreciate Representative Lim's thoughtfulness in relationship to helping public safety. So bottom line here, I'm going to have to say my allegiance as far as search and rescue is with the search and rescue volunteer. That ground pounder to, you know, that super alpine mountain rescue guy, you know, and how he feels about how we should make laws and regulations in regards to outdoor activities. But as a search and rescue manager, that guy at the end that the families and friends and public are pointing at to get this job done, I'm going to have to say that I'm in support of the concept that you're here to listen to today. And my reason for that basically is the ability to pinpoint and target greatly does reduce the man hours and exposure to high risk environments. It does. You know, there's a lot of management that has to be done with that, because when we know where somebody is, then I know that a lot of these guys back here will go to extra lengths in high-risk environments to do that. So, you know, that's, we have to manage that. But as a sheriff, I'm liable for these guys back here. You know, they have to have special training just to be there. And and so, bottom line there, anything I can do to reduce the risk to them in that environment, you know, I'm all for. As a boater and a commercial pilot and an outdoor recreationalist myself, I'm pretty used to regulation. You know, most of that actually does not bother me. You know, I keep a ELT in my airplane, and hopefully I'll never have to use it, but it's one of those things. It's there if I need it. Same on the boat. You know, the law says I have to have certain things with me. Hopefully I'll never need it, but I've got it there if I do. Then the better you get at this thing, the more embarrassing it is when it happens. The word budget came up, you know, and I'm one of those guys that, you know, doesn't have to worry too, you know, doesn't like to worry too much about what it costs to save lives. But having just turned in our county budget, it is an issue. I mean, you know, just this weekend, all you need to do is look around the parking lot and say there's nothing free about search and rescue. You know, you know, I'm the first guy that knows that where the money comes from for that. And it comes and goes. Right now we're in a go period, and there is no money. Fortunately, you know, a few federal funds over the last 5 years has allowed us to bring ourselves up to speed just to be able to participate in that. But now that I have some things, like a lot of grants and things, you know, the money to maintain it after this point has gone away. So now we have some concerns about that. About two-thirds of Mount Hood is in Hood River County. You know, the other parts and the most used part is in Clackamas County. Fortunately, that line that goes down the middle of that mountain, it isn't a barrier between who's responsible for what up there. It's a consortium of search and rescue people, not only out of both counties, but the organizations involved. You know, and again, whatever I can do to support their effort is why I'm here. But, you know, on the behalf of the expectations of the public and, you know, those people, that, especially the families, you know, I get a call from the December folks, you know, from each family that are still missing at least once a week, still begging me to keep looking, and I do that. You know, every chance we get, you know, we've turned every exercise that we have into an exercise looking for the people still missing. The word came up there, would it have made a difference for those folks? And, you know, yes, it would. Okay. One climber was found too late because of the weather. You know, does it say, would it have saved his life? Nope. You know, be the first one to say that. But I'd have known where he was when the opportunity made itself available to get there. And fortunately, it was a good piece of rescue investigative work while they were on scene that found that guy. It wasn't the cell phone. The cell phone put us in the area, but did not pinpoint his location. This piece of equipment would have done that. It was just a great piece of work on a rescuer that did that. And would it have made a difference for the other guys? Boy, you know, again, the big deal is you got to manually turn them on. You know, I'm okay with that. Even if the three guys would have had just one locator beacon with them, if they'd left left it behind with the guy that they had to leave behind, we'd at least known where he was. And then the other two guys, you know, if they didn't have one or able to act, you know, if they'd had one and able to activate it, gee, we'd be all done with that deal today. So, anyway, that's enough for me. You guys know where I come from.
Representative Thatcher.
Thank you. I've heard from volunteers saying that they would be concerned about increase in false alarms, and I'm wondering if you could comment on that.
And I think the, well, false alarms is one thing. Just a guy setting off the thing and somebody receiving it and not knowing that there's a problem at all. That's an issue. Every time somebody sets off an alarm in their house, we have to respond to that, false or not. Same issue. The other is, I think that's a piece of that question, is is not using the alarm or not calling in a problem until too late. We want people to be able to report something and not feel liable for something. That's the way I want them to feel. I want to be able to respond to something before it becomes a life and death issue. There's some feeling that this may cause people not to call if they don't have one.
Representative Girardi?
Thank you, Chair Riley. First of all, I'd like to say my hat's off to you for everything that's been done, especially on Mount Hood. And I also appreciate the fact that you answered the question and your concerns about the search and rescue individuals. This question actually deals with, is your county facing federal forest dollar cutbacks? And would that impact search and rescue or your department?
Yes, it does. Hood River County is one of the many counties that are affected by the cutoff of federal forest receipts, specifically Title III funds, which, there was no money. Then we have 5 years of good life, and that just came to an end. And, now we do the last search. This is how we manage those funds. We knew that they were only 5 years. We budgeted personnel money, maintenance money, bought some stuff, search and rescue stuff with that money, and thinking that, let's think of this over a 10-year period. One search took away 3 years of this extended life of our search and rescue budget because of personnel costs alone and the cost of supporting the search, the food for the search and rescue guys, the fuel, whatever they needed. So we've got some big concerns about where we're at now. Basically, Hood River County alone is out $25,000 hard dollars as a result of one search, and we were hoping that $14,000 would last us for 5 years.
I have one small question. You mentioned that the cell phone, it got you in the right area, and this would have pinpointed. How accurate is this device? What's the scope of the area that you would be looking at with this device?
I'll say this. Cell phone tracking technology has come a long ways. In the last year, a year ago, technology is going to put you in a 25-mile radius because that's basically the radius in which it picks up from towers. And then as the tracking evolved, then it would get you into 5 miles. Now it's within a quarter mile. And then the experts will tell you it's going to be closer than that. But I'll say honestly, from my personal experience, it'll get you within a quarter mile.
You're talking about a cell phone.
A cell phone.
What about the device that this bill requires?
The actual mountain locator beacon hopefully I'll be able to dig the hole and get you out of it with that unit. I mean, it's pinpoint accuracy.
Okay. Thank you very much. I appreciate you coming all this way to testify, and we appreciate what you do. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chairman, and the committee.
Thank
you. I'm going to call a couple of people at once, and I'd like you to come up as a panel, and then both give testimony, and then we'll ask questions of both people at the same time. I'm going to call Leslie Brown and Scott Russell. And Leslie, if you would just identify yourself and go ahead and give your testimony, that would be great.
Hi, I'm Leslie Brown. I am testifying on behalf of the Access Fund, which is a national nonprofit advocacy group for climbers in preserving the climbing environment. We represent climbers of all types, rock, ice, and mountains. We have three local affiliates in Oregon, including the AAC Access Committee, the Mazamas, and the Smith Rock Group. We are active in Oregon with several stewardship events every year and have awarded many grants to projects in Oregon to mitigate the impact and care for Oregon's unique climbing environment. We are active in discussions of many mountaineering issues and have been active with regard to Mount Hood and a variety of issues with the USFS. I've served on the Access Fund Board of Directors for 6 years, four of them as treasurer. My association with the Access Fund goes back to 1991, when I spent 10 years representing the Access Fund as a local regional coordinator in New England. I also speak from experience as a climber. I have been an active and serious climber since 1987. I've climbed cliffs and peaks, including many of the Cascade volcanoes, Mount Shasta, Mount Adams, Mount Hood, Mount Rainier, and Mount St. Helens. I have been a professional mountain guide for Eastern Mountain Sports Climbing School from 1995 through 1999, and as an independent guide since I moved to the Northwest. Since moving to this region in 1999, I joined the Volcano Rescue Team, which is the group charged with performing search and rescue, technical search and rescue, in the Mount St. Helens region. We service the Gifford Pinchot Forest down to the Yaqut Burn State Forest, and we go all the way over to Mount Adams. We've performed many missions in the state of Oregon as mutual aid. We've been down to Mount Bachelor. We've been up to Mount Rainier. We've been over to Mount Adams. I also teach downhill skiing on Mount Hood. I'm on Mount Hood weekly from November through April. My varied experience as a climber, a climber's advocate, a guide, a rescuer, and oftentimes resident on Mount Hood gives me a good perspective, I think, on the proposed legislation and the impact it may have. The high-profile deaths in Oregon this winter have turned the spotlight on search and rescue efforts and preventing human tragedy. It's laudable to have the preservation of human life as a goal. In fact, that is the goal that inspires me to be an active search and rescuer. Yes, even us young, not so young women can be effective search and rescue personnel. I don't believe that this legislation will accomplish that goal. It is right to want to do something in the wake of tragedies, but the legislature needs to really take careful steps to make sure that it doesn't have any adverse unintended consequences. The legislation assumes that climbers are in particular danger and that the danger can be mitigated by mandating that we carry maps, compasses, and mountain locator units when climbing Mount Hood above 10,000 feet. I want to address a few of those presumptions. The first presumption is that mountaineers are dying more often and immediate action is necessary. This misperception is addressed in the American Alpine Club Deputy Director Lloyd Athern's May 1995 paper called Climbing Rescues in America. Reality does not support high-risk, high-cost perception. A copy has been provided to this committee. Nationwide climbing activity has boomed, yet fatalities have been relatively steady and declining since the 1970s. The improving safety record of climbing is even more startling when you look at fatalities per climber day or climber attempt on notorious peaks like Mount Rainier and Mount Denali. The fatality rate per climbing attempt has dropped 99% on Denali since 1960 to 32 deaths per 100,000 attempts, a rate of 0.032%. Assuming 10,000 attempts per year on Mount Hood, and I have not been able to locate in the few days I've had to research this, how many attempts there are on Mount Hood, but the last stat I had was 100,000, the fatality rate is 0.001% from 1981 through present. These statistics demonstrate quite clearly that mountain climbing is not a reckless activity, and climbers do have a good safety record. I want to address a second presumption that mountaineers account for a large share of rescues. In the national park system, mountaineering of all types accounted for 1.8% of all rescues. Day hikers are rescued 16 times more often and account for 30.6% of all rescues. Boating follows with 21.9%, swimming 13.7%, overnight hiking 10.4%, and quads 12 times, 7 times, and 5 times the number of rescues as mountaineers, respectively. The statistics within Oregon are the same. In 2003, which was the last report for the AAC's paper, 3.8% of all rescues were for climbing, both rock climbing and mountaineering. Hiking, motor vehicles, hunting, and wandering top the list of activities that generate rescues every year from 1997 through 2006. A review of the 2005 search and rescue report from Oregon Emergency Management shows similar numbers. 3.8% of all rescue missions were from climbers. The fourth presumption behind this legislation is that rescuing climbers is an expensive burden to the public. According to Oregon Emergency Management, total paid hours for climbing rescues, both rock and mountaineering, totaled 500 hours in 2005. Volunteer hours totaled 2,826. This is a ratio of 5.65 volunteer hours for each paid hour. This is very similar to the statistics in the AAC's paper from 2003. Total volunteer hours by mountain rescue units are 6,163. These highly proficient, highly trained volunteers spend more hours rescuing others than their own. According to Oregon Emergency Management, a total of $125,000 of non-wage costs were incurred to conduct all SAR missions over a 10-year period. Clearly, the state can't afford the money it has been putting into rescue, and climbers constitute 3.8% of those missions. The state's own statistics demonstrate that climbers do more than their fair share for the hard work required to perform rescues. The state can't afford to replace the labor that we volunteer mountain rescuers provide for technical rescue. The written remarks that I left with you have a table of these statistics. I was very disheartened to see in the newspapers that legislators portrayed climbers as selfish for opposing this legislation. I will give that legislator the benefit of doubt as being unaware of the very generous and selfless contribution of the climbing community to rescue. Mountain rescue teams attend monthly classroom sessions and monthly field sessions. We pay over $2,000 or more for our own equipment. We participate on long missions. The hundreds of hours and thousands of dollars invested by each of these individuals should be appreciated. It comes at the expense of our families, our careers, and seriously reduces the hours we can spend pursuing the passion for the mountains. We do it for the brotherhood of the rope, to keep the mountains open to recreation, and because we know an accident could happen to one of us, one of our family, or one of our friends. A wise politician once told me that reasonable men can disagree. Disagreement can stem from logical reasons, not mere selfishness. The $5 to $10 rental fee is not the issue. The issue is, who should determine the equipment list? The knowledgeable person who has responsibility for their own safety in the parking lot, fully aware of their capabilities, their partner's capabilities, and conditions on the mountain, or politicians? Economic activity from mountaineering benefits Oregon. Climbers pay state park passes, snow park passes, food, lodging, rental equipment. They buy additional equipment for their climb. Over 10,000 people attempt Mount Hood each year. If each person adds just a few dollars to the economy, the state more than offsets its costs. For me, just the cost of the gasoline. And I always stop in Oregon for my gasoline, pays a considerable amount to the state coffers. These facts demonstrate that legislation is not overwhelmingly needed. Now I want to talk a little bit about the potential impact of the legislation. Foundation of climbing is an ethic of personal responsibility. I am responsible for my safety. I hold my partner's life in my hands. This is a powerful bond and a powerful responsibility. As a guide, I instill this in my clients from their very first experience. You can never abdicate responsibility for your safety to anyone else. You and your partners are responsible for each other. Other folks have stated that parties needing rescue are putting rescuers' lives at risk. I vehemently disagree. As a rescuer, we are drilled from day one. We are responsible for our safety, and we will not compromise that during the course of a mission. It is unacceptable to create more victims. The incident command structure puts decision-making power into the hands of an experienced person. A safety officer is dedicated to ensuring the safety of rescuers. Rescuers on the ground are trained to operate in a wide variety of terrain and conditions. We will work in conditions that are very uncomfortable and indeed completely miserable. However, very few rescuers are hurt or killed in the performance of search and rescue. Victims do not intend to be in dire straits. They should not feel guilty about putting others at risk. I don't want anyone to feel guilty making that phone call to get me out in the field. The state's proposed mandate erodes that fundamental personal responsibility. The state does not have the expertise to determine what climbers will need. The need is not determined by the date on the calendar. I do like that it would be narrowed by the date on the calendar, but I'm not even going to be so self-serving as not to note that 36 of the last 39 deaths on the mountain occurred in summer months, not winter months. Climbers need to make their determination about what equipment they need to carry and not simply follow a checklist. The state cannot proactively address conditions as they evolve daily or hourly, and the technology is changing very quickly. For example, Saturday of this last week was a gorgeous day for climbing. I had to teach skiing instead. Sections were somewhat icy, but perfectly safe for crampon travel. Crampons, ice axe.
Leslie, excuse me just a second. Because of the equipment, you're blurring because you're too close to the microphone.
Okay.
If you could back away from the microphone.
Sure.
Thank you very much.
Okay. Navigation was not an issue on Saturday, and a lot of people were on the mountain. Weather rolled in on Sunday, and the avalanche conditions changed radically. Icy surfaces became more dangerous in high winds, and certainly more equipment was required. A well-equipped party ran into trouble and needed help. They were at the same elevation as the ski area and would not have been required to carry an MLU under the proposed legislation. The cell phone call and information provided was sufficient for a rescue. The beacon provided extra security, but the outcome would have been exactly the same. We knew where they were. We knew where they were Sunday, and we were not able to get them out until Monday. My unit was not on that rescue. I tend to blur that line. I want to make that clear. An equipment list does not ensure safety. Conditions, not the calendar, should determine what people carry. The state proposes one navigation option to mandate map and compass. Our team trains with contour maps, compass, and GPS. On the south side of Mount Hood with 20 parties on the hill on a calm, clear day, you don't really need lots of map and compass and navigation tools. Many people can't navigate with map and compass. I can see this clearly in our training every year. We really have to work on those skills with our trainees. Members of the general public can't navigate by map and compass very well. Many maps are inaccurate, especially in the Cascades. The couple of times that I have really wandered afar on Mount Hood, the map was not accurate. Snow and ice routes change every year. This year, the Hog's Back does not lead directly to the entrance of the Pearly Gates. People need to seek a variety of information sources to navigate and make route selections. GPS is a great navigation alternative, but it also presents some challenges. Batteries go dead. A variety of map datum choices are available. There are differences in models, and satellite reception can affect the effectiveness of a GPS unit. Since people might not be familiar with everything, I did bring a couple of things just to demonstrate a little bit. This is a GPS unit. They're not $500. That would be the high-end line. You can pick these up for as little as $100. Another perfectly viable option to a contour map is a route description, a picture and a map. In fact, for many people, the photograph with line drawings are a straightforward navigation tool. The widely available Falcon Press guidebook, Climbing the Cascade Volcanoes, and I left a copy of this with you guys as well, has photographs and line drawings as giving complete information on the south side route. So I think that you kind of, by dictating how people navigate, it is not the best thing. Navigation is critical. Teams should be free to select the navigation tools that they feel the most comfortable with, not one size fits all. Mountain locator units have been touted as a panacea. There are some very serious shortcomings to MLUs. Of the 40 most recent mountaineering deaths, there are no known cases where an MLU would have absolutely saved a life. There are two cases that I think it could have changed the outcome. For the MLU to have a positive outcome, two events must occur. The party requiring rescue must activate the unit. This will not occur with sudden trauma, avalanche, or falls. I included in the packet left for the committee a chronology of mountaineering deaths on Mount Hood from 1959 to present. You will notice that the vast majority of the causes of death are avalanche and falls. In both of those cases, sudden trauma would probably render an individual unable to activate the MLU.
Leslie, are you getting fairly close to this?
Yes, I am.
Thank you.
You don't think this is fascinating stuff?
It is, but we have a limited time.
The MLU is a one-way communication tool that is not heard without a two-way interaction. The active MLU signal requires, and for it to be heard, is required that someone makes a call to the sheriff's office. The call could come from the party on the hill in trouble, or families or friends. If I can call you, and I have a GPS, and I can give you my location, what do I need the MLU for? If my family calls you, that's a wonderful thing. I'm probably far more overdue at that point. So if people believe that an MLU is going to help you pinpoint that person, you have to realize you have to have two events occur. The unit must be activated, and someone has to call the sheriff's office. There are other alternatives for making contact in order to initiate a search. I generally carry a radio. This is my team's radio. It has Oregon SAR frequencies in it, Washington SAR frequencies in it, and a variety of others. When we train on Mount Hood, that's where we do our crevasse extraction training every year, and we've done some other training missions over there. This is what we carry. We don't carry MLUs. We're an MRA team. We don't carry MLUs. FRS is also a unit. An option, FRS is, we'll see people carrying them in the ski area all the time. If I'm climbing in the summer and my husband's skiing all day while I'm climbing the mountain, this is how we'll keep in touch. And if I need help, which has never happened yet, if I need help, I'll contact him with this and then he'll initiate whatever. Another alternative are these avalanche beacons. I have some concerns with MLUs. And one of the concerns that I have with MLUs is people will confuse them and the functionality with an avalanche beacon. Avalanche beacons have a very short range. With an avalanche beacon, if my buddy goes into gets caught in an avalanche, I turn mine into receive. His unit is still on transmit. An MLU transmit, remember, it's only a one-way form of communication. If I have an MLU and I have opted not to therefore carry an avalanche beacon, if somebody is buried in an avalanche, I cannot do anything to help them. Avalanches, you have 30 minutes to get your partner out. Otherwise, the probability of a recovery of a living individual is very small. Here are my five major concerns with MLUs. People will have a false sense of security by following the state's checklist by simply carrying an MLU. They will expect and they will wait for a rescue. They will not do enough to rescue themselves. The mountain environment is not like the city. You can't dial 911 and summon help within 3 minutes. A party could get lucky and initiate a rescue when a ready team is present. That is often not the case. There is a significant delay between the activation of an MLU, the call going to the sheriff's office. The call comes in, the sheriff does some fact-finding and initiates a mission activation. A page goes out to the team. They change their clothes, gather equipment, respond to the station, drive to the mountain.
Leslie, excuse me. If you would please wrap up, we have a whole list
okay.
of other folks.
I just would like you to know that on average, it can be 12 to 18 hours before somebody
Not
is
bad.
Carried off a mountain. People may take more risk while carrying an MLU, believing that it will facilitate a rescue. In an MLU mandated environment, not everyone will comply. Those who do not comply may fear a fine or delay seeking help initially. The delay could cost lives. I see this all the time as an EMT. People hesitate to call because they can't afford the ambulance. Even in my county, the ambulance is free. People may confuse MLUs with avalanche transceivers. We covered that. And MLUs are not standard mountaineering equipment. This is the only place where it's required. So mountaineers are not familiar with it. They arrive at Mount Hood. They don't have one. They now have to go out and find one. What would make a difference on Mount Hood? I would love to see you post the weather and avalanche forecast. I have looked every Saturday. It has not been posted yet a single time this season. I think it's very interesting that the board on the wall says, in case of emergency, call the sheriff on the phone and the numbers on the phone. Guess what? There's no phone and there's no telephone number provided. I would like to see you prepare and distribute at the trailhead an information brochure about safe navigation to Timberline. There's an excellent one that PMR has prepared, which has the GPS coordinates and compass bearings for getting down off the mountain. Mount Rainier makes this available at trailhead when you go in. Wouldn't it be easy to leave those there so people can find their own way down? I would also love to see people collect the registration forms and note parties that are overdue. The beacon may be transmitting. Family hasn't called yet. People are overdue, and nobody's even looked at the paperwork, and the car sits in the Timberline parking lot. I want to end with one small excerpt from an editorial in the Columbian written about my team and published January 6, 2007. These same words could have been written about my brothers in Oregon. Cheers. This region is fortunate to be the home of mountain rescue volunteers who meet the highest standards of courage and dedication. Too often their valor and sacrifice are overlooked. These are just two of the many success stories. Cheers to the unsung heroes who, instead of asking questions or hurling accusations, simply resolves to be their brother's keeper and get the job done. I speak for many climbers and urge you to support our ethic of personal responsibility. On behalf of many rescue personnel, I ask that you insist all climbers take primary responsibility for their own safety and not mandate one-size-fits-all equipment. Allow us to help them if they need it and when they need it.
Thank you. I was going to hold questions until after our other panelists spoke, but I didn't expect it to be quite that lengthy. So I'm going to go ahead and allow questions now from the committee. Representative Edwards.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Several times you alluded to the equipment that you do carry. Why don't you personally carry an MLU?
I don't carry an MLU because I would rather have a two-way conversation with the department and be able to immediately activate a search or summon help if that's what I need. The beacon won't be heard unless someone calls. And I, as a rescuer, would like to know what's going on the hill. What is the situation? That tells me what equipment I need to bring up to that individual in order to rescue them. What kind of medical need have they? What circumstances exist?
Follow up. Go ahead.
So is there a bulk issue? Because you're carrying lots of equipment. with you, and would it ever be a valuable extra tool should you want to use it, or is it partly an issue of bulk as you're climbing the mountain?
At 5'2" and 120 pounds, weight is always an issue with me. I do try to carry exactly what I need. I do have some redundancy built into my safety thinking, because redundancy does keep us alive in the mountains. I think I have that base covered. Therefore, I don't carry an MLU.
Thank you.
I have a couple of questions, if I may. First of all, thank you very much for your expert testimony. I was hurrying you, but it's very enlightening, and I do appreciate it. And I believe that you don't need one of these devices. You mentioned a couple of things. You said that the danger would not be mitigated by this, and I agree with you. I don't believe that Representative Lim's bill was intended to mitigate danger, but to help in the rescue when its danger has already caused some event. The share of the rescues, yes, I've already thought of that myself. It's a very small percentage. We have many more boating, swimming, hiking accidents and rescues than mountain climbing rescues. In my mind, that does not mean that we shouldn't do everything we can to save all of those folks. And just because it's a small share doesn't mean that it's a meaningless share. Every life is important to me. And a question about who should decide. And I want your comments of what I said after I finish. My opinion about who should decide is that the people who know what is needed are the people who should be making the recommendations and helping with the decisions of what is carried in the mountain or any other dangerous or even slightly dangerous pastime. Those people who are the experts in that field are the ones that we should turn to determine what equipment is needed. And finally, I'm not sure that a list of equipment is the right thing to do in any case. What I think is much more reasonable is to, again, ask the experts what's needed, make sure that legislation doesn't keep us from keeping up with the best technology. And by putting a simple list in the legislation, we run the risk of technology outrunning us tomorrow. And so with those comments, I would like your feedback on what you just heard me say.
I know that the committee has the best interests at heart, and every human life is valuable. And I believe that climbers, for the most part, do take a very strong interest in making sure they have the right tools when they are in the mountain environment. When I look at the folks who have, in fact, died on Mount Hood, there is very little additional equipment that could have prevented those tragedies. Mm-hmm. Obviously, there is the collateral impact on search and rescue people and the collateral impact on the families. Obviously, we all want to bring every brother home. And that is just never going to be possible. We can mandate a lot of different things, and that will never fully be possible. I will do my best, and I know we continue to go out and do our training missions. As the sheriff noted in his area, we do ours to continue to search for people that we know are still out there. Mm-hmm. I just don't see the danger of people thinking that this is an instant tool to summon help. To me, means that more lives could be lost. An interesting thing I noticed in this year's the 2005 SAR report is the number of self-recovered people that walk out on their own drops significantly. It averaged 31% over the last 10 years, and in 2005 it dropped to 22%. Are we getting to the point with technology out in the field where people are just calling and waiting and not proactively trying to assist themselves. People truly do not know how long it will take for search and rescue to get to them, even when we know precisely where you are.
Thank you very much. I appreciate everything that you do, and thank you very much for your service on the mountain, and I appreciate your testimony. If you would identify yourself and go ahead with your testimony, and try not to repeat too much of anything that's been said before. If I
Thank you, Chairman Riley and members of this committee. My name is Scott Russell. I've been involved in search and rescue for 20 or 30 years. I'm familiar with Mount Hood. I made my first summit of Mount Hood in 1960. I've earned my living on Mount Hood in the wintertime and in other high country. I was a volunteer in the 1986 search in which 9 people died on Mount Hood. As a result of this tragedy, several like-minded search and rescue people came together to form the Mountain Signal Memorial Fund. I've been the president of that group since its inception. And incidentally, that group is no longer a corporation in this state because due to frequency allocations, we had to turn the equipment over to the federal government, and there was a cooperative agreement between the federal government and Clackamas County Sheriff, and Clackamas County Sheriff funds the replacement and administration of the MLU system. This group put the mountain locator unit system in place, including the way it is used, the equipment used, and how it is available to the public, and how the rescuers use the system. I appreciate Representative Lum's authoring this bill, and I think everybody in this room is of a like mind to make that, to make searches easier and to ensure the safety of our folks. Now, the bill amends Oregon Statute 401.625, and this series of statute was a result of House Bill 915, which we introduced. And when we started it, our bill was shorter than Representative Lum's bill, and when it finished up, it was, I think, in the order of 14 to 18 pages of bill. And what we needed to do was to get some liability protection for the system we put together, because we couldn't get a manufacturer to place this on the mountain because of liability concerns. I regret that some of the additions to that bill included the map, the altimeter, and the compass. It was not our intention, but it was part of the making of the sausage, I suppose. In any event, you have to understand that cell phones were not in use at the time. There was an extreme amount of time expelled to put this system together and how it would work, and that it is not a two-way conversation, and it is not monitored 24 hours a day for some very specific reasons. I won't go into all that history because I could take up more time than Leslie did with that. Today, I'm here to urge that you let the Governor's Task Force on Search and Rescue, or a subcommittee of that task force, decide the fate of the Mountain Locator Unit on Mount Hood. There are many unsolved issues with the idea of mandatory use of the locator beacons, and here are just a few. Funding. Currently, there are not enough MLUs available to satisfy Senate Bill 2509. The MLUs that are available were purchased with donations raised by the Mountain Signal Memorial Fund. The $5 rental fee only covers the cost of checking out the MLU to the climbers. The climbers do not pay for the annual cost of maintaining the system. So to say it's this $5 cheap piece of equipment is wrong. This unit is in the hundreds of dollars to purchase. In fact, we have an
gentleman's agreement with the manufacturer that they provide the maintenance of these at cost. They're losing money on these, essentially, but they're committed to this cause, as the people in this room are committed to mountain safety. So there's going to be significant costs that would have to be dealt with somehow. I'm not saying that, you know, we're going to put a price on lives. I'm just saying we have to be realistic. The time required to check out MOUs to every climber will cause major problem at the current distributors and the climbers. How long are you going to wait in line to go up to a place where you don't want to be waiting in line? How do we enforce this law? And who is responsible when someone climbs without an MOU, gets in trouble, and or is injured? Is it the fault of the sheriff or the U.S. Forest Service or the state of Oregon that somehow they were not doing their job enforcing the law and letting people slip through without locator units? 4 years ago, a federal law was passed to create the ELT system for airplanes. It is a 24-hour monitored system, and it's generally not accurate enough just for search purposes on Mount Hood. It had a 97% false alarm rate and cost millions of dollars to operate. Corrections are being made today to make the system more workable. And, of course, it has saved lives, but perhaps at a much greater expense than might have been necessary if the search groups had been consulted prior to it becoming a law. And I agree with you 100%, Chairman Riley, that the people who know the system should be involved in it. These are just a few of the many possible complications that can be envisioned with a mandated system, and they will need to be addressed. My point is that the option to make the MOU system mandatory and a description of how that should happen should be made by the mountain search and rescue community. The MOU system that is now in place was developed by SAR people. That is why it works. It is important not to destroy what now exists by overloading the system without thinking it through very carefully. In conclusion, I think that every climbing group that climbs on Mount Hood should have an MOU. But every climber should have many other pieces of equipment and the know-how on how to use it. The most valuable asset is to be self-reliant. The decision of this recent group to bring the MLU was helpful, but without the many other wise decisions, the welfare of this group would not have turned out the same. Mandatory use of the MLU or any other equipment further reduces the self-reliance, which is the most important factor to surviving on Mount Hood. We have heard that the rescue may not be possible due to weather. I want to ensure that when rescuers find someone, they find people alive. The reliance is a responsibility, and self-sufficiency is paramount. I'd be happy to answer any questions you have on the MLU system and why we did some of the things that we did.
Thank you. Any questions for us? Yes, Representative Thatcher.
Yeah, I don't know if it's related to what you're saying, but I was just wondering if either of you know of any other state that's requiring such a thing for mountain climbers.
Representative Thatcher, when we started this program, we put out a questionnaire to mountain climbing groups all over the world. New Zealand was thinking of something of this similar idea. And using very similar equipment and similar philosophies to use it. But nobody had done it at the time we did it. I've had been in contact with people from Nova Scotia, and they were going to put a system like this together to find people on their miles and miles of coastland that they have where they have trails. It's also interesting to note that we were very specific about what the MLU was to do. And it was not to be an avalanche transceiver. As Leslie has pointed out, the receiving equipment is too far away time-wise. Avalanche transceivers do the job. This was in response to
the climbs over. I've got newspaper articles going back. That was 50 years at the time, so it'd be 70 years. And there'd be people that were in snow caves, and you couldn't find them. They used bamboo probes to find them. In 1986, we updated to aluminum probes. And that's pretty much the difference. So what this was for is to find people that are lost, buried on the mountain. It wasn't a panacea. When anybody checks these out, they sign a piece of paper that says that so that they are to understand that pulling the cord doesn't turn the sky black with helicopters to come pick them up off of the mountain. And that responsibility is what's going to keep you alive. And anytime you degrade that responsibility, you're going to have more cases of people in trouble on the mountain. And I fear that this mandated law would do just that.
Mr. Chair, I need to phrase my question more specifically.
Please.
I guess what I was asking is, are you aware of any other state that has a bill like this that they passed and have implemented?
No.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you very much. Representative Barr.
Thank you. It just kind of dawned on me. So if this had happened now, and you, and with all the technology we have out there now, would the system that you put in be the system that you would put in today? Does that make any sense?
If we hadn't had this system and we had the same circumstances that we had today, would we have done this? I guess it would kind of depend on whether people survived or not. The comments that were made by the representative earlier about search and rescue people taking very seriously their job, and in 1986, it was a very serious thing for me and many other people that we could not find people. We can find whales all over the world. We can find pandas in China. We can find polar bears. And that's what we're trying to solve. This equipment that we're using is still the state of the art for finding people or animals that are buried. This is the same kind of equipment that's used to find bears that are hibernating in caves in the wintertime. This is what's being used. And incidentally, you might notice on the ORS statutes that this equipment is specified and the procedures are specified by Oregon State Police. And this is one of the things that we had to do in order to pass this bill. And their fish and wildlife experts were involved in that committee when we put all this together. So they understand that. You could make a better system, yes, if you wanted to use more of the technology of today that would incorporate this plus some of the satellite equipment, so then people could initiate their own rescue. That brings up another complete discussion. Today you can do that with cell phones. You couldn't do that in 86. It could be done. Whether you want to do it is another question.
Thank you.
I hope I answered your question. I kind of rambled on there.
No, I think I got my answer.
Representative Edwards, you have a question?
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think I know the answer to this question, but for my own confirmation, is there a permitting process or a licensure requirement to ascend, climb Mount Hood, or I'm not really familiar with it, so.
Are you talking about specifically the use of this equipment or just to climb the mountain?
To climb any mountain over to ascend a certain altitude or anything. Is there any licensing requirements?
And Leslie, if you wanted to jump in, I see you're leaning forward. You may go ahead and jump in and answer that if you have the answer.
There is no licensing requirement to go to a certain altitude. Most of the major peaks do have a registration system where climbers self-register and leave their itinerary. Typically, the registration form asks for your car, its location, your intended route of ascent, what equipment are you carrying, emergency contact numbers, when do you expect to be back, and that sort of thing. So that is available on two sides of Mount Hood. That's available on Rainier, Adams, St. Helens, Tetons.
Great.
Thank you. Incidentally, Representative Edwards, this form on Mount Hood is updated periodically and generally after a search where we said, boy, if we'd have known what color equipment they had, if we'd have known if they'd had sleeping bags, if we'd have known they had insulated pads, mm-hmm. this would be, you know, they should, if they know how to use this stuff, they should be okay for this many more days. And the decision to go on the mountain during rescue is a very serious thing. And I mean, I've been involved in that a lot, and there's other people in this room who I've worked with on the mountain that come in with an extra 30 or 40 pounds of rime ice on their bodies as a result of going through a search and this stuff sticking to you, and you have to beat it off with a club. So,
thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you both for your testimony. I'm going to ask, is there anyone who is signed up to testify who would not be able to come in on Thursday of this week? I see two hands. Would the two of you come up and make a panel? We want to get the people who can't come back on Thursday because we're going to finish up on Thursday. If you could just decide who's going first, identify yourself for the record, and go ahead with your testimony.
All right. My name is Joe.
And please make it as short as possible.
Sure. My name is Joe Whittington. I'm the owner of Oregon Peak Adventures. We're a guide service that's based in Portland, Oregon. I did actually email you comments last evening. I'm sure all of you have studied them intensely. But so what I'd like to do is just summarize some comments. First, I can answer Representative Edwards' question about permits and requirements. Mount Hood has absolutely no requirement for registration. The only thing you need to do as far as any enforcement procedures is to fill out a wilderness permit. But registration is totally voluntary. There is no control of, you know, non-commercial climbers going up Mount Hood, period. They're not required to register. Mount Adams, Mount St. Helens, Mount Rainier, you are all required to actually purchase a permit and register with the agency. There.
Those are in Washington.
Yeah, those are in Washington. And but none of the peaks in Oregon have any requirement for permitting or registration at all. Mm-hmm. Period. For, you know, non-guided climbs. Okay. So on the sign-in form, it requested if you were for or against, and I guess with that stark choice there, I said against. Personally, I'm also a member of the Mazamas, and I'm a climb leader for the Mazamas, although I'm not speaking for them today. But I've climbed, you know, 40, 50 times on Hood, and led most of those climbs. And since they became available, have always carried one of the mountain locator units. I believe it's a really good tool. I don't think it's that heavy, and I think it's, you know, no big deal to carry it. I think it's a reasonable thing. It's inconvenient to get them because there's only a couple of places, two or three places in Portland, and they're available on Mount Hood. They're only available at the Mount Hood Inn. So the folks that came up from Texas, road was out, right, on 35. They came back the other way. There was really, if they came in late at night, there was no way for them to get one unless they wanted to spend the night. And so that's the first thing. I guess my other comment on this is that I'm not necessarily against the legislation requiring them, but I am against, philosophically, if you're not going to enforce it, and if you're, you have rules on the books right now. I believe there's a $500 fine, which could have been imposed many times. Has that ever been imposed? I don't think so. Are you going to go to the survivors, you know, the mom whose son just died or daughter just died up in the mountain and say, okay, you owe us $500 because they didn't have an altimeter? If you're willing to do that, then put a law in the books and do it. But if you're not willing to do that, I don't see why it's pointless. You know, and to a certain extent, maybe today's testimony is good. But if you know, if it doesn't come up with some useful tool, actually, then I'm not sure why we're doing this. So, secondly, The next thing is, I don't think you can legislate proficiency. Right? I mean, we can pass laws. Doesn't mean you're not going to have any stupid people anymore. We probably would have passed laws on that a long time ago. So, I spend a lot of time in the mountains, and I see a lot of really strange behaviors up there. And I think actually it's surprising how much people get away with on the mountains. If everyone got what they deserve, there'd be piles of bodies around the mountain. So, it's a pretty amazing thing. So, here's my issue. Okay? I think it's a good idea. We can't force people. We haven't been able to force people to do that. I don't think we're going to force people to do that. I mean, the Mount Hood climbing ranger, one of my guides, actually a couple of my guides are team leaders for PMR, and one of my guides was a climbing ranger in Mount Hood. He didn't do a second summer because they couldn't afford to pay him benefits. Okay, so here's the deal. Mount Hood is one of the first or second most climbed mountains in the world. Okay, over 10,000 people. The U.S. Forest Service, which actually has jurisdiction over the area, has not issued any commercial climbing permits for guide services since 1989. There's basically two guide services left. One of them actually is only if you're, you know, Minnesota, you want to climb the High Point in Oregon, and you call up, there's really only one guide service that'll do that. And I have permits for working up to the wilderness area on Mount Hood. I have permits for Adams. We do most of the climbs on St. Helens. If there's anything that can be done to make fairly valued guide service available so that all these inexperienced people could go up in the company of a guide and be, you know, where we practice risk management, that would be a really good thing.
Okay, I'm gonna cut you off because... Hey. We do have another committee that's going to come and take this room away from us.
Okay.
And we've got one more person who couldn't come back. And if you would identify yourself. And
My name is Rocky Henderson. I'm a member of Portland Mountain Rescue. I'm also here today to represent the Mount Hood Rescue Council, the Oregon Mountain Rescue Council, which are all the Oregon teams, and I'm representing the National Mountain Rescue Association. I've also been kind of authorized to represent the Mazamas, which are 3,000 climbers. I'm here to speak in opposition to this bill. I think there's been some strong arguments made here in opposition. I'm not going to bore you with some of the notes that I had. I think those points have been made. A couple of kind of questions and concerns I think that you do need to consider. I don't believe that Representative Lim is correct in saying that there are no consequences to this bill. As I read it, we have Bill 501, 590, which I generally refer to as if you're stupid, we'll punish you bill. It came out of an accident on Mount Hood or a search on Mount Hood where lawmakers decided that they were going to do something about not having beacons. And so they made a law that said, and that's 401-590, that says if you act irresponsible, you can be punished by a $500 rescue cost recovery, or rescue costs up to $500. And it also says in there various ideas about what responsible behavior is, i.e. take a locator, take a cell phone, take a compass. It also says that if you break any Oregon law, you are subject to this law. If your bill before you today becomes a law, in my mind, that triggers 401-590, and you are then subject to a $500 fine. So I don't think there are no consequences to this law that is before you. Another point I'd like to make is just the kind of an unintended obligation. If it becomes a law that you have one, in my mind, it says that the user has then some sort of expectation of a rescue, and that is a higher than what it is now. Therefore, the sheriff has a stronger obligation to go and find you. As a volunteer mountain rescuer, I don't want that sheriff telling me that he really, really needs to go because the law says he has to more than is currently that obligation. So I think there's some real concern there that needs to be looked at specifically by the AG's office, and I think your committee needs to have this reviewed by the AG in terms of what those consequences are. All the points about kind of personal responsibility, all those have been made. I don't want to take any more of your time. I would like to entertain any questions. I personally have been involved in all of the mountain locator unit incidents on Mount Hood. I was managing this last one this last weekend. I've done a lot of research on the technology, the newest technology, PLBs and all of that. If you have any questions on that, and I may be able to come back next Thursday, I don't know. But I would just like you to be informed in this decision. I also would like to speak very strongly about the governor's task force. I think there's some very good work that's going to be done in that, and I really would encourage the legislators to work with that group in improving search and rescue in this state. So with that, I just
thank you.
Offer to answer any
questions. We have 5 minutes. Any questions for these? Yes, Representative Thatcher.
Same question I asked last gentleman. Are you aware of any laws on the books anywhere in the United States or regulations that require a mountaineering company or individual to carry an MLU?
No. In fact, I think we all understand that the mountain locator unit is unique in America as a device that's even available. So it's not available, so there's no laws anywhere else that would require it.
Yes, Representative Beyer.
Well, in your testimony earlier, thank you, Mr. Chair, you were talking about the fact that they don't have to register or get a permit or anything to hike. Would you think maybe that might be a good direction to go to have more tracking of people who are actually hiking the mountain?
Again, any regulation that you make, you should also provide the infrastructure to enforce that regulation. And like I said, they have one climbing ranger on Mount Hood. And as far as I know, that's the only person that's up there doing anything. He's mostly seems to be counting how many people you have in your group. But there's no equipment check. There's really nothing in place.
Thank you.
I think that's a reasonable thing that you said. If we're going to pass a law, we should have a way to enforce it. Unfortunately, we have lots and lots of laws and very few enforcement people right now. And if we followed that advice, we would get rid of most of the laws that we have for our highways because we don't have enough police to enforce it. I don't think that's a reasonable thing for us to do. And so I think we will close this hearing right now. I'm going to close the public hearing for House Bill 2509 for now. I'm going to recess the hearing until Thursday. Thank you all very much for coming. I appreciate it.